Welcome back to the Pistols Firing Podcast. I'm Carson Cunningham. Joining me is Kyle Porter from the Pistols Firing blog. Kyle, it was an emotional weekend. We have a lot to discuss.
We do. It was a weird weekend. One of the weirdest I can remember, just, and I was talking about this with Kyle Fredrickson and David Ubbin. It wasn't like 2001 where you had time to process everything and then a game happened later on. Everything just like happened at once. And I guess that's what made it so, or feel so strange. I don't know. You were there. What did it feel like when you're there?
Well, I was at the 2001 basketball game when they played Missouri. I believe it was 8 or 9 days after the plane crash.
Right. And,
it's still one of my not fondest memories, but something I will never, ever forget. Just the feeling in the building. It felt like a funeral. It felt like almost like OSU should just stop playing basketball for like a year. But once they played and they ended up beating a really good Missouri team, and OSU wasn't even that good that year. It truly was one of the most remarkable things I ever saw. Now, the difference is, like you said, it happened this hours before the football game. And everywhere you went, it was a similar type feeling, though, that to 2001 in the building. Like, riding up the elevator, people just kind of stare at you, and we just kind of nod, you know, like this is awful. Like, we shouldn't even really be here is almost the feeling I had. But it's just, it was so weird inside the stadium, and it didn't, like, J.W. Walsh said it best yesterday. I interviewed him, and he said, even though we won the game, it didn't feel like we actually won at all.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the feeling I had was, yeah, they came out and they played great, and they did what they had to do against Kansas, but, like, that was just so moot. It was just so moot.
Yeah.
That's just the feeling I had, and I do want to say one thing about Mike Gundy. I could not have been more impressed with how he handled this. And I don't know about you, but his post-game press conference, I got kind of chills hearing him talk about how important homecoming is to him as an alum, how important it is to the school, and how this awful event won't change that. And I think, you know, we kind of make fun in the past about how OSU fans want an OSU grad to be their coach in every sport. It's just a weird thing that it just seems almost exclusive to OSU. Like, other schools don't think that way. But I do think in times like this, it really matters. And I think we saw that with Mike Gundy.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think that, like, every school would say it has this, like, nationalism about it, or it's, you know, every school has pride in their own school or whatever. But I think one of the differences in Stillwater is how everything, and again, I said this to Ubbin, but everything in Stillwater revolves around the school. And it's not like that everywhere. It's not necessarily like that at OU. It's definitely not like that at Texas. So because of that, you get, I don't know, like people who live in Austin don't like see Charlie Strong everywhere. People who live in Stillwater see I used to see Mike Gundy all the time at random places, like running down Hall of Fame, you know, like, so yeah. So you see, I don't know. You see Mike Gundy, you see the community just really be sort of united because they have to be. Like, everybody's like one step removed from the university, if not a student or a teacher there, you know?
Yeah, and it's just remarkable to me how this is the third tragedy that OSU's had to deal with. It's almost like, in a weird way, it's almost like OSU is not getting used to this, but knows how to deal with it, and it's just, it's awful. And
did you think they should have played the game?
I did. I think it takes a lot to cancel a football game, just because you have 80,000 people in town for the game. You have Kansas, who's made all the trips, made the whole trip to get there. And the day of, it's just really hard once everyone's there. Unless, I don't know what the circumstances would be to cancel a game, but I thought it really would take a lot to do it. And I thought, at worst, I thought they might delay it a little bit just to get you know, it was happened two blocks from the stadium. I mean, people going to the stadium had to like navigate around this horrible crime scene. But I thought they should have played it. I'm glad they did. And although it was a weird feeling, it didn't feel almost right. Do you make the game up later in the year? I don't know how all that works. I thought they had to play it.
Well, it's interesting. You said something there like it takes a lot to cancel a game. What would it take? Like, what if like 100 people had died? Like, would they cancel the game? You know, like I don't mean that's that. A good point. I don't mean that in a callous way, but
no, you're right.
It's weird to think about. Like, and I compared it to, and this is I don't mean this like as a direct comparison, but it sort of would have been like if sports had been played in the U.S. the night of the 9/11 crash, you know, mm-hmm. like, and that's obviously a much grander, bigger scale, but so is all of sports in America, you know, like, it was weird, like, I don't know, and I do wonder what it would take to get a game canceled, you know, I think I'm with you, like, I don't think they should have canceled it, but I was texting with OKC Dave, and he was like, I just couldn't get into the game, and I felt the same way. It's like, what are we doing? Like, this is dumb, you know. From a football standpoint, and from I think even just like a human standpoint, like, it's kind of good they're playing Kansas. Like, people didn't feel obligated to stay. People could kind of leave at halftime and go like hang out with their friends and family and whatever.
It was very fortunate they were playing Kansas. I mean, that sounds callous too, but it's just true. I mean, imagine if that was Bedlam. Like, yeah. Those guys had so much more on their minds than a football game. Now it was Kansas, so they could just roll out there and win. But yeah, it was just a weird day, and I thought OSU handled it as well as you possibly could have. And I thought it was really cool what Gundy and them did before the game. They went out to the 20-yard line and did the Lord's Prayer, and I think Kansas wanted to, like, I think there was talk in the pregame that Kansas wanted to join them, but once they were all, it was on the other side of the field, and Kansas just kind of let them have their moment, and
yeah,
it was not something you're used to seeing before a football game, that's for sure. And I don't know if we want to talk about football or not, but it was...
Well, I got a couple more questions since you were there. Who did you see on Saturday that you were like, oh, wow, I can't believe you're here. Like, this is a big deal. You know, was there anybody that kind of stood out that was doing interviews or whatever?
Well, I ran into Mary Fallon. You know, anytime the governor's there, you know, something's happened.
Yeah.
And I didn't see like a ton of people. It was more of just walking to the game, and the looks on everyone's faces just felt, everyone felt like just guilty. It was not guilty, I guess, just a horrible vibe. Everyone kind of would look at us and like ask us, hey, do you know anything? Like, they wanted information from us. Like, we don't know. We just got here. And it was just a very somber environment, and it was an environment in which I think a lot of the fans even kind of felt like, why are we playing this game? It's kind of the vibe I got from everyone around.
Well, and it is weird, too, how people find out, because it's 2015. Everybody's got their iPhone, whatever, and you can kind of find out right away. Like, if this was, like, 1982, like, some people kind of would have known, but probably Larry Reese would have been telling everyone as, you know, sort of before the game, like, what had happened. Like, I don't know. It's just...
Well, and that was startling, too. We were walking to the game from the opposite side of the stadium, and if you didn't know, like, if you weren't on Twitter or whatever, like, you wouldn't have known that was going on the other side. Like, it was pretty much, you know, there was business as usual as far as fans tailgating and going to the game. But I don't know about you, how involved you were with homecoming, but it really hit home for me, because I was a part of the parade. Like, I helped build a float when I was in college. I've seen kids just sitting along the street countless amounts of times for the parade. And when I heard about it and saw, you know, a few pictures on Twitter, I just thought it was like a car accident, just, you know, around the parade, maybe a float hit a car or something. I didn't really realize the magnitude of it till I got to work. We were supposed to go to Norman and do an hour-long post-game show for OU Texas Tech, because it was on ABC. And then next thing we know, we're finding out, you know, there's 30, 40 people that were hit and several casualties. And we're like, we can't like our news director and I were, and Brian Keating were having a conversation as to what to do, and we were like, we need to go to Stillwater. Like, this is a huge deal. Like, yeah. And they canceled our post game show, and it just, I didn't, you know, seeing it trickle out on Twitter, I didn't really realize the magnitude of it. It took at least an hour or two for me to fully grasp what exactly had happened.
Yeah, I was actually at, family and I went to IKEA on Saturday, which, by the way, that's the worst idea. IKEA on a Saturday morning.
Is that more or less depressing than Kansas football?
It's
going to IKEA on a Saturday.
There were people eating breakfast at IKEA when we got there. It was weird.
I'm guessing that's the non-football crowd that hangs out at IKEA and eats breakfast.
Well, and yeah, my college game day was not playing at IKEA, but my phone had died, and so I didn't care. I was like, I don't. Whatever. Saturday morning.
I'm at IKEA on Saturday. What do I need Twitter for?
Well, I don't want to look at my phone anyway. Like, I just try to get away from it sometimes. Mm-hmm. And my wife had gotten a text from her mom or her sister or somebody saying, you know, sort of what had happened. I guess they had seen it on TV or the news or whatever. And I was like, oh my gosh, like we got to get home. Like this is going to be a huge deal, you know, as soon as I found out. But at the time I didn't even realize, I mean, I'm like you, I didn't realize how big of a deal it was going to be. And then obviously it turns into a much bigger deal than you want it to be. I think for me, it was the, you know, the kid that got killed and the mm-hmm. kids that are in the hospital and stuff. It's like, I mean, we just took our kids to a high school homecoming parade here like 2 weeks ago. And it's like, what, you can't take your kids to a parade? Like, I don't know. It was just, I don't know. That was the part that really kind of drove it home for me, I guess.
Yeah, and that night, I kind of had trouble sleeping, to be honest with you, because like once I went to sleep, I just envisioned, not on purpose, but I started envisioning the scene and just what that could have been like witnessing it. It was just you didn't realize just how gruesome it was until you got more information. And yeah, like you can't, like it happened. The most startling thing for me was how fast it happened. People that were there said it happened. It was done with before they could even like blink.
Yeah.
So it was just, it was horrible. And
what is
another thing for OSU to get through.
What do you think will be the moment in the, like over the, like in the days following that, what's the moment that stands out most? Like we've seen all these different things that have happened, like KD and Westbrook going to the hot, like all these different cool moments. Like which one was your favorite or really stood out most?
Well, the Thunder are just incredible. I mean, they get it so well, and it comes from Sam Presti, but Kevin Durant and the connection he has specifically is just, it's going to be hard to fathom him leaving, just the connection he has with Oklahoma City. But for me, the thing that sticks out the most for me is Mike Gundy, man. Like, it truly was incredible hearing him speak about the event, the aftermath, dealing with it with his players. Just think about where we were just this time last year. We were wondering if this guy was even going to be the coach at OSU.
Yeah.
And the way he handled this and the way he kind of stood up for OSU and the way he kind of has changed and really, like, think of the pressure that was on him that day. The entire community is in mourning, basically. The entire fan base is looking at him going, what are we going to do? How are we going to handle this? He's got 100 and some players who are dealing with death probably for the first time. I mean, some of them maybe not. Who knows? But at least a few of them, this is the first real occurrence they've had close to them where people have been killed.
Yeah.
And then he has to get them ready to play a football game. And he did all of it with flying. I thought it was Mike Gundy's finest moment at OSU. And the 2011 plane crash. The way he took in the Budke family after the Fiesta Bowl, are you kidding me?
That was cool. Yeah.
I mean, that to me, like if there were ever any thoughts of him leaving, I think those are gone. I mean, I think he has become a symbol for OSU and really stepped up big time in a horrible situation.
Yeah, and John Hoover wrote a column, I think it was today, about how he didn't say it like outright, but the implication was there that Gundy has kind of turned into this generation's Eddie Sutton in terms of a just a coach at OSU that people can kind of lean on. And it's true. I mean, he's been, I don't know if institutionalized is the right word, but like he's part of the institution, and it's just, it's unfathomable. I mean, it's kind of like, and I don't mean this in a bad way. Like I mean it in a good way. You and it's kind of like the same way I mean it about Durant. Like you just pay him whatever he wants. Like you can't put a value on him being there, you know? Like it's,
well, it's so easy for a coach to just say, hey, look, you know, it was horrible, but we have a game to play. Like we can't do anything about it. I feel like some coaches that weren't as invested in OSU would have played it a little differently publicly. I was kind of surprised on Monday. I was there for the press conference, and I kind of thought maybe OSU would be like, hey, let's no questions about this, let's move on, and maybe Gundy wouldn't want to talk about it anymore. But no, they were an open book, and Mike Gundy spoke about it for at least the first 15, 20 minutes of his press conference. And yeah, imagine a coach coaching the football team that's from, I don't know, Pittsburgh. Is he going to really grasp what homecoming means to OSU, what that event means, and just the fact that now it's three tragedies that OSU's had to deal with? I don't know. I had those thoughts too, just the difference, what kind of difference there would have been in a head coach who didn't have the ties that Mike Gundy does.
Yeah. I think my favorite moment was the, this is random and it just probably has to do with me just being on the internet, but the OU choir singing the OSU alma mater. That was cool.
Yeah, I showed it on my sportscast last night. I thought it was incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, and really, OU has been tremendous. Yeah. And Mike Gundy even reiterated that on Monday too. But just the fact Bob Stoops and Baker Mayfield, after whooping Tech, all the emotions Baker Mayfield has going into that game, the first thing he says is his thoughts are with Oklahoma State. That was big time. I thought OU, and really everyone in the Big 12, has kind of shown that it's a tight-knit group. And I guess Texas Tech's going to have a moment of silence on Saturday before the game as well. So it's been cool to see everyone kind of bond together and show support.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Did you see what Glenn Spencer said about how he didn't want to see a stat sheet after the game?
Yeah.
That was like the perfect Glenn Spencer way of handling everything, I feel like.
Yeah, and I retweeted a, you know, I'm a big Florida State fan, and they lost in a horrible manner against Georgia Tech. And I retweeted a fan from there and said, and it was a great tweet. He said, four people were killed at an Oklahoma State parade. No, I'm not upset with losing a football game.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, it just kind of puts in perspective for you. You know, like, normally I would have been upset and breaking stuff if Florida State lost a football game, but it really kind of puts you in perspective just what's really important. You
yeah,
know?
For sure. My biggest question, I think, going forward, and we can kind of get into talking about football a little bit, how does the Oklahoma – so one of the I think, most optimistic things about this season is that Oklahoma State gets TCU, Baylor, and OU at home, and that's all in November, obviously. My question is, how does OSU's fan base and crowd – respond over the next month in terms of, you know, supporting the team? And because that was, I mean, they have one of the best, I feel like, home field advantages in the Big 12. Is that going to, I don't know, like, I can't help but think that, I don't know, does Saturday linger? Like, is it subdued the rest of the year, or does time kind of push them forward into being super rowdy and being a factor again? And I don't mean to make this about football, but I'm genuinely interested in how the Oklahoma State fans and kind of community will rally around this sort of touchstone.
Well, I don't think the atmosphere will be a problem, because it got loud on Saturday. I mean, and Larry Reese, I don't think it'll be a problem as long as Larry Reese is on the microphone, man. I don't know if you've heard, did you read in that one story what he says before the game? You know, he really just says, like, this is our home, yeah, this is our family, yeah. And just, oh, man, it gives you chills.
Yeah.
I think the atmosphere will be fine. I do worry how the team is going to handle it on Saturday. I mean, this has been a crazy week.
Yeah.
I mean, they're visiting hospitals yesterday. They're out of their routine, and I don't want to make it sound like that's going to make them lose a game by any means, but it's just they've been dealing with a lot. And anytime you're dealing with things out of the norm, it's a risk. But I don't think the atmosphere at Stillwater will change. I think it'll, if anything, it might bring everybody together. I mean, it was loud the day of the tragedy, so I imagine it'll be fine moving forward. I do wonder how it's going to affect them this week, though.
Yeah, I do too. You want to talk football for a minute?
Yeah, let's okay. do it. I couldn't even get excited about the throwback helmets. First off, I they were awesome, but like I almost tweeted like I just the mood I was in. I just didn't even care about tweeting about a helmet. But,
yeah, no, I know.
But they were great. They were great.
They were great.
And let's face it, it's Kansas. They stink, but they did what they're exactly what you're supposed to do when you're playing Kansas. They dominated them from the jump.
Yeah, they did. And did you see that David Beatty compared Oklahoma State's defensive line to Alabama 2012?
Because they were the 2007 Patriots before the game. Now they're 2012 Alabama.
I mean, this guy's – he's. I mean, I know like he needs job security, but I don't know if they're that good. I mean, they're great.
I mean, they're really good.
Yeah.
But, I mean – who was on that 2012 Alabama D-line? Bunch of pros.
They won it all. They went back-to-back that year, I think. Yeah, I just think that I think it's time to go to the Patriots offense. Like, just don't even run it. And I will say, Mike and Mike did a really good job of, and they've been doing this since the Kansas State game, of running misdirection. And Kyle Fredrickson wrote a cool little post on or article on this in the Oklahoman today. They've been doing these kind of flip passes with guys going different directions and stuff. And I think that is I think that's what you got to do. I mean, you can't line it up and run it straight forward. Even against Kansas, I mean, Robert Wetzel of Cowboys Drive for Free pointed it out. They ran for like 50 yards in the first half, and a lot of their rushing yardage was
reverses.
Well, was in the second half, and, mm-hmm. and some of it was it got counted as passing yardage because it's those little foot plays to receivers going in the other direction.
Can I say that I like what Mike and Mike are doing for the first time this year?
Yeah,
I think. That's the only way they're going to have any semblance of running game is trickery. Is like 10 guys going in motion each which way. I tell you, it's a lot to deal with, especially around the goal line, man. The diamond formation, all the motions that's going on with Walsh. They had a couple walk-in touchdowns against Kansas, which I think would have been close to walk-ons against a lot of people. Just there's so much to take in for the defense, and that's what they have to do. They can't line up in like a power eye formation and hand it off tackle left or off tackle right where the defense can see it coming. They have to have smoke and mirrors.
Yeah.
They just have to. Well, and I think they've done a great job with that and all the reverses, all the jump pass, not the jump passes, the little flip passes. That's the only way they're going to get any yards on the ground. And I think they've done a great job in realizing that.
Yeah, and the problem I think comes in, you're trying to out-athlete people at that point a little bit, and I don't know that you can do that against Baylor, TCU, and OU. I think that you can try your best, keep them on their toes and stuff, but that's a difficult thing to maintain against the best teams in the league. Yursich, by the way, talked about how he wanted to violate the eyes of opposing linebackers. Did you see that quote?
I did.
That... He said it just tries to screw with the linebacker, fits in the run game to violate people's eyes. That is
pretty heavy.
That's intense.
Violate their eyes. He's violated my eyes over the years, I'll tell you that.
When are we going to stop referring to J.W. Walsh as a quarterback and start referring to him as Oklahoma State's backup running back?
Or starting running back?
Or starting running back.
Or didn't you call him like the stay-at-home dad? Is that what you're calling
no,
him?
No, he... Yeah, see, you don't...
I didn't think you were an idiot. I don't know where you came up with that. I like the analogy. He is the guy. He is the dad that gets to take the kids out for ice cream while mom's making all the money.
Rudolph is the stay-at-home mom, and Walsh is the dad that, you know, takes the kids to the movies on the weekend, ice cream, because he didn't have to deal with them,
So, I got a new nickname for Mason Rudolph, then. He's the breadwinner. Mason, the breadwinner, Rudolph. Does that work?
No, you've still got it backwards. Rudolph is the stay-at-home mom.
No, Rudolph is?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I got it backwards.
He's not appreciated. And then
does all the work with the kids. Yes. Okay, I got what you're saying.
And then Walsh, We can call Walsh the breadwinner. I like that a lot.
You like the breadwinner?
That's a great nickname.
I like the general. You can't replace the general. General Walsh.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
That's pretty solid. General Patton.
I wish the breadwinner applied to Rudolph, because that's a good name. Walsh was great.
He was awesome. And I mean, like I said, that motion stuff, that's a lot to deal with. And they're seventh in the country in red zone offense. I mean, it's working. And I do wonder, like, Mike Gundy can say all the right things. Oh, these two are great kids. They love each other. They're great teammates. I'm sorry. Mason Rudolph's got to be a little pissed, doesn't he, when he gets taken off inside the red zone?
Yeah, I think so, especially because Walsh has, I think, 14 touchdowns and Rudolph has 12. I don't know if pissed is the right word, but I think it's certainly...
At least annoyed a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. But I also think it's cool that Walsh is getting this season. Like, it's...
Right.
It's good that he's being celebrated in this way, I feel like.
And they absolutely have to have it. Like, their red zone offense was not good before they switched to this. And it's if Rudolph can realize it's for the team, which I think he does, I think he'll get over it. But I asked Mike Gundy on Monday. I said, Mike, it's 1988. How does Mike Gundy handle getting taken out in the red zone? And he just point blank, I wouldn't have liked it. But he goes, I got to hand it off to 21 and throw it up to 11 as well.
21 and 11.
Yeah, aka Barry Sanders and Hartley Dykes. So the kids that go to school at OSU now can't feel too aggravated when he doesn't call him by name. He called Hartley Dykes 11.
He called Barry Sanders 21. That's spectacular.
It was awesome. But, if Mike Gundy's telling the truth. Like, he wouldn't have liked it. Mason Rudolph probably doesn't like it, but it's for the good of the team.
Yeah,
so.
And I don't –
It's just for this year, right?
I don't want Mason Rudolph – to like it particularly. Like, I don't want a quarterback that's like, yeah, take me out when we get inside the 10, you know? Like,
well, and I do wonder if Gundy's going to do this again next year if they have someone mobile enough to do it, because he said,
yeah,
I used to not be in favor of two quarterback systems, but now I am. Maybe he likes that red zone package enough to where they'll do it again next year. But
yeah, I saw that.
Another podcast, I guess.
Yeah, that is interesting. I mean, if Oklahoma State wins this weekend against Texas Tech, even if they lose... Let's say they go out and win by, like, two touchdowns. I mean, at what point do you start talking about this team could win the Big 12, you know? Like,
I mean, with Russell going down for Baylor, I think you start talking about it right now. Yeah. I do think it's going to be a close game. I think they're going to have their hands full on Saturday. But, yeah, it's a very real possibility. They get all three at home.
Yeah.
And we know how hard it is to win in Stillwater. It's really tough. I mean, some really good Baylor teams have gone in there and gotten shellacked.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting. How about our boy Taylor Cornelius getting in the game against Kansas?
The oil baron. He looked good.
Played a quarter and a half.
Yeah, he ran it. He threw it.
I thought he looked great.
He's going to end up like Hubenak is playing at A&M in 2 years or something.
Yeah, what? Like, me and I saw Hubenak, and it took me like a strong Googling session to remember who he was. He was at OSU after transferring from UConn. Now he's at A&M?
Yeah, he actually played at Blinn Junior College, which is
the powerhouse
is I believe either right outside of College Station. It's either in Bryan or College Station.
Out of Brenham, I think.
Oh, is it? It's really close to College Station. Anyway, mm-hmm. Yeah, now he's playing at A&M.
But did you hear what Gundy says they call Taylor Cornelius?
No,
it's not the oil baron, or it's not Taylor Cornelius the eighth, as I'm calling him now. Doesn't it sound like he's like the eighth one?
Yeah, for sure. Is he not? I legit thought he was like the fourth or something.
He has to be. Gundy says they call him corn dog, which if I'm him, I'm petitioning for oil baron. Yeah, I don't want to be called corn dog.
Yeah, I was actually Googling oil baron photos on Saturday, but I couldn't find a good enough one to tweet out, so...
I think people get so confused when we call him that, but they have to realize his name sounds like an old 1910 oil baron.
Yeah.
And that's where the joke comes from, people.
Yeah,
if you don't get it.
It's like something from, like, he's a character out of There Will Be Blood or something.
Yes. He needs a Pistol Pete type mustache to go with it.
Is Oklahoma State the quietest top 10 team in the country ever?
Like, they got to be up there, right?
Do people realize they're in the top 10?
I don't think so. It just comes back to the schedule being so backloaded. I don't think anyone's taking them seriously yet, at least nationally.
Yeah. That's fair.
Yeah, I mean, we don't think they're going to Do we think they're going to win the Big 12?
No.
I mean, we think this is a good team, but we don't think it's a great team, right? I hate to be too realist here, but...
Yeah, I think that's right.
Like, don't you think after TCU we're going to be going, oh, yeah, they...
Well, I
time for the real schedule.
Yeah, I sort of feel like it's coming this weekend. I kind of feel like Texas Tech's going to win this game.
Do you?
Yeah, I do. I mean, Tech should have beat TCU at home. I mean, Tech's not like a joke. They're not great, but I don't know. OSU catches a break that's a 2:30 game and not a night game. But
yeah, no doubt.
I don't know. I do think I think Tech's going to win. I really do.
They've played well there the last couple times they've been there.
But the thing about that is, even if Tech wins, Oklahoma State can still win the Big 12, right?
If they win out, yeah.
If they beat, I don't know how the tie. What if there's a four-way tie? What are we gonna do? Oh, we talked about that. We're gonna flip Bob Bowlesby up in the air.
Yes, we're gonna hand out four trophies and just try and get a four-way Big 12 playoff for all the marbles.
Yeah.
Even though they couldn't get one team in last year.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's the other thing. Is the Big 12 going to get shut out of this playoff again?
I don't think so. I think as long as, well, I mean, if there's a tie, I don't know. But
I think
the Pac-12 stinks this year.
Yeah.
SEC will get their champion in, and then the Big 10 champion.
Well, I think Michigan State and Ohio State are both getting in.
Yeah, they might. I mean, the Big 12 really needs Michigan State to lose before they play Ohio State.
Yeah.
That could be interesting for sure.
And then you got Clemson just sitting there waiting to.
Oh gosh, I forgot about them. They are really, really, really good.
Yeah, where's the Florida State game this year?
I believe it's in Clemson.
Ooh.
Yeah, because they played last year. They played last year in Tallahassee. Remember, they didn't have Jameis Winston. He was running around with a hat on, yeah. And they won because Clemson fumbled somehow when they were trying to run the clock out.
Yeah, that was unbelievable. Do you feel
like... Isn't Ohio State pulling a Florida State this year, just scraping by against bad teams?
No, it's different because they brought in the closer now. They got JT back. It's going to be on now.
They were, struggling in the first half with... Who were they playing? Indiana? Or no. Who was it this week? No, Rutgers?
They smoked Rutgers.
They were up by, seven in, the first half.
Yeah, Rutgers isn't that bad.
Yeah, you just love Ohio State. You love Urban Meyer.
I do love Urban Meyer.
Florida State beat some bad teams too last year. And I don't give any credit.
I don't think I love Ohio State.
That's the weird thing is I used to love. I loved their unis. I loved them. I always rooted for them in the big Michigan game. But now that Urban Meyer's there, I can't.
It's interesting. He was on. You should go listen to this. Actually, he was on Dan Patrick on Monday in studio, and Dan Patrick was asking him some pretty intense questions, and he was good. It was interesting to hear him talk about just his team and what he was trying to do with his. I mean, he was like, Cardell threw for 300 yards last week. He's never lost, and we had to bench him. I don't. This is just it's crazy. What we're doing here, and he was talking about. I thought this was really interesting how. You're as good of a coach as your players are good. And I think it's true. I mean, so much I feel like of being a head coach is did you lock up a bunch of really good recruits, you know?
Of course, yeah. And that's what people don't talk about him is he is a lights out recruiter.
Yeah.
He gets everybody. Yeah. When he got to Florida, it was a wrap in the state. Percy Harvin grew up a Florida State fan. His freshman year in high school, he said he was going to Florida State. And sure enough, he went to Florida because Urban Meyer was there.
Yeah.
So that's just, you got to have the Jimmys and Joes, as they say.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else we need to talk about? How much fun is November going to be just for college football?
It's going to be insane.
Is it the best regular season of any sport?
I think so. I think it has to be just because how important every game is. And I don't know about you, but this might is shaping up to be one of the best Big 12 seasons ever with the way they've scheduled it, the way everyone plays everyone. And it's been really cool to see OU and OSU specifically, how they play the same teams, really close together. You get to compare and contrast.
Yeah.
Just back to back to back. So that's really cool. And I'm going to Lubbock on Saturday, so I'm not bringing a Halloween costume, but it's going to be a little terrifying amongst the people of Lubbock.
You should dress up as Kingsbury. Go to his presser, interview him as him.
As Coach Bro.
Yeah, that would be That would be spectacular.
I have the sunglasses. Maybe I could pull it off.
We do have a we have a good guest on Thursday.
Should we spoil it? I don't want to spoil it.
Yeah,
we should save it. But yeah, it's a long time person associated with the basketball program. So it'll be a lot of fun. We'll get to share some old basketball stories, I'm sure.
Yeah, it'll be great. It'll be a good time.
Looking forward to it.
Okay, Carson. It was fun. It was partly fun and partly sad, but it was good.
Yeah, I think people needed to hear kind of our thoughts on it, and it helps to talk about all this stuff. And it was cool to see OSU kind of rally together again. So we'll talk to you again on Thursday.
All right. Talk to you later.